morning, Royals! Or maybe good afternoon, evening, whenever you're listening to this. This is the Royal Deluxe Podcast, a podcast bringing you breaking news and analysis every Monday and Friday as part of the Fans First Sports Network. Of course, it's Tuesday. Had a bit of an off day on Monday, and I was taking care of some other things, but no, not much has been missed, so hope you can forgive me for the slight delay right there. I'm Lux, at least that's what I keep telling people, and if you want to know my real name, you can go at the MFNKC. That's my Twixer account, where I post some random nonsense every now and then, and also talk about the games as they go along. Or, if you don't care about that at all, at Royal Deluxe Pod, that's the podcast Twitter, where I give you a nice, wonderful, welcoming, good morning post every morning. And, one of the things I was doing on Monday is I was writing for FansFirstSports.com. Wait, no, it wasn't. God, I freaking forget. Why do I get these names mixed up? I did this on that White Sox podcast I was on. How embarrassing. I was writing for farmtofounds.com, so go over there if you want some Royals insight and analysis in written form, especially by people who are a lot smarter and better at it than me. But I talked about the Royals starting rotation and how freaking awesome it is, which we will still do on this podcast. But also fansfirstsports.com. That's another place where you can get other content by other creators around all of sports, really. It's in the name. Fans First Sports, they should trademark that as their slogan. I'm sure they won't get in the... I'm sure that will not get them in trouble whatsoever. Anyway, what are we talking about today? The Royals are a good baseball team. You know what? That's what we're talking about. How about them Royals? They swept the Chicago White Sox in 4 games at home. And I can already hear some people going, it's just the White Sox. They're a bad baseball team. Who cares if they swept them? You know what? It is impressive to sweep a team in 4 games no matter what. And I was even saying, hey, the White Sox may be bad, but one of the pitchers they're going to send out is really, really good. Garrett Crochet was the American League leader in pitching war when we saw him. So, actually, yeah, getting all 4 wins was impressive, even if it's against a bad baseball team. I mean, look, no team loses 75% of its games. One team should at least expect to win 1 every 4 games, right? So that's what I'm saying. Sweeping a team in 4 games is really impressive, no matter who it is. And you know what this means for the Royals? This means they are 2 games above 500. For the first time since I pretty much started doing this podcast in April 2022. They have a 6-4 record. And like I said, the Royals haven't been above 500, 2 games above 500, since they went 2-0 in the start of 2022. Oh, and how wrong was I about the things that I said back then. And I'm going to keep them in mind as I continue doing this podcast. But, you know, on my Twitter, I've been doing these post-game little videos, just short-form, you know, discussions about the game and all that. And I had a thing where I was saying that the Royals haven't been above 500 for like the entire time I've been watching them as a fan. Like, I missed the 2015 parade. Well, I went to the 2015 parade, but I missed the come up. I watched the Royals in 2015 when they went to the postseason, but I only saw the postseason. I didn't actually regularly and actively follow this team until the middle of 2016. And by middle, I mean like late May, early June. Which by that point we had already lost Gordo and Moose. Things just kind of fell apart right after that. So yeah, I jumped on the bandwagon pretty much as soon as it started derailing itself. So things started going south immediately when I showed up, and I have not really seen it get better. So what I'm saying is, I still feel like I can count on my fingers how many days I've actually seen the Royals be an above 500 team since I started watching them. So any amount of time that they will have above 500, I am going to cherish. I'm going to revel in it because I really appreciate it. And you know what? I'm proud. Like, I legit feel proud of this team for starting the season 6-4. This was pretty much the best case scenario, and if nothing else, this is what we wanted from this team. They went 2-4 against the Twins and the Orioles, two good teams, and they were competitive in those games. The Royals have yet to lose a game by more than 4 runs. All right, they have not had any kind of embarrassing loss yet, which in and of itself feels impressive. But then they beat up on a bad team. Like, this is what we want a good team to do. We want them to stay even, stay competitive, just make it close against good teams, and then just farm wins against the bad teams. So, for all intents and purposes, the Royals have been as good as they possibly could be. I mean, maybe not technically as good as they possibly could be, because, you know, as good as they possibly could be would be 10-0, and everybody would be amazing. But there are holes in this team. There are holes in this roster. There are issues with it. But still, they're coming out on top. They're looking really good right now, and I just feel proud. I'm very happy with what they've been doing so far. So Friday's game, just kind of recapping these games real quick. It was a close game, 2-1 Royals, which I actually kind of expected, because I did, you know, have some respect for this guy, Eric Fetty, that the White Sox signed in the offseason. He was actually someone that a lot of us in the Royals community were looking at as a potential signing for the Royals. So I thought that was a great get by them. And, you know, he did a pretty good job. He threw 5 innings, gave up 1 run, and Singer sort of matched him, sort of outpitched him, through 6.1 innings and only gave up 1 run, 3 base runners allowed on 2 hits and 1 walk. Brady Singer was actually kind of fantastic. He didn't strike out a ton of hitters, but it's fine. It's fine. I have no problems with Brady Singer right now. Brady Singer's off to a really good start, and that's really cool and exciting. So, yeah, low-scoring game, but the Royals managed to strike first, with an RBI double from Salvi, and then Gavin Sheets gave up a home run. That was like Brady's one mistake in the game. So it was a tie game for most of the way, but then Sox bullpen comes in, can't hold on. Royals score off of that, thanks to an MJ Melendez RBI. That was kind of the story of the whole weekend for the Royals. MJ Melendez just driving in runs left and right. Then on Saturday, Royals won this one 3-0 off the shoulders of Michael Wacha's 7 scoreless innings, 2 hits, 1 walk, again kind of mirroring Brady Singer right there, but then 8 strikeouts. So yeah, this was definitely the start that I wanted to see from Michael Wacha, because I've been saying that I liked his start in Baltimore, even if the run prevention wasn't necessarily there. I still liked the process. I just thought he had a tough lineup to deal with. So very happy that he just kind of got to just flex a little bit on some on very, very bad hitters. I mean, man, the freaking White Sox, dude. I feel bad. Like I at this point, I legit feel bad for them. It's like, I've always been trying to be reasonable and say, oh, it's not going to be that bad for these guys. Like, oh, Pedro Grifol, he's going to be a good manager for the White Sox. That's a great fit for them. I was very happy for Grifol. I was excited for the White Sox. I'm like, yeah, he's gonna turn things around over there. I mean, I understand he wasn't handed a golden opportunity right there, but there was plenty reason to believe that things would be better over there. And then it's just like, oh, why is it so bad? I actually think later today I'm going to go onto the White Sox subreddit and just be like, guys, what is Grifol doing? I understand he's a Royals guy, but we did not expect this. This was not what we thought Grifol was going to be. I'm even starting to think, was Mike Matheny protecting us the entire time? Did Dayton Moore actually know that Grifol was not going to be a good manager, and he just brought in Matheny so we could avoid something much worse than that? I know this is hard to believe, but I mean, no one expected Grifol to be this bad for the White Sox. That lineup is just completely out of it. It's just so checked out. Andrew Benintendi looks so freaking bad with the bat and out in the field. It's like, what is going on over there? You know, and again, I feel as much as I've made my hatred for the White Sox franchise public on this platform, at this point, I just feel sympathy, because they modeled themselves after the 2019 Royals. I hate the 2019 Royals. Those guys sucked. They were infuriating to watch. No one should have to deal with that. No one deserves to watch the 2019 Royals. Not even White Sox fans. Oh man, it's. It's sad, but you know what? Again, you just gotta do what you gotta do. You know, so Michael Wacha throwing seven scoreless, I don't care if it's against a bad lineup. He still threw seven scoreless, so it looks good on his resume. I'm going to take that. I'm going to accept that. Nick Anderson and Chris Stratton also got to pad their stats a little bit, had some nice outings over there. Who pitched in relief on Friday? It was a combination of Schreiber, Stratton, Will Smith, and James McArthur. Yeah, maybe we should talk about this, actually. I'm glad I went back to that. Will Smith is no longer the closer. So, once again, I was saying this about the Baltimore series and how I kind of liked Q's attitude and how I think he's kind of helping this team a lot. He's kind of helping drive this team forward. And another aspect of his game is that he seems to be making some pretty quick decisions where just within a couple of appearances, he's like, all right, Will Smith is not the guy. Like, we cannot keep doing this for the full season. We're going to go with someone else. And I mean, I am still wondering if Will Smith is just simply injured because in every outing we saw from him this weekend, he was still throwing 90 with his four-seamer. That's just not normal for him. He was never a flamethrower, but you could at least expect, you know, low 90s and, you know, a reasonable 92. Instead, he's struggling to get into the 90s at all. So, he gave up a hit and a walk. And just got one strikeout, just pitched for one out in his appearance. And then Q was like, nope, you're done. Sent in James McArthur. He got a double play very quickly off of two pitches. So, yeah, I think that said enough. James McArthur is probably the closer right now. And, you know, I was saying that going into the season, I'm like, this guy's not experienced. It's not really entirely fair to place such high expectations of him. I wasn't expecting McArthur to be the ninth inning guy, to be the closer for this team. And I really like that the Royals brought in Will Smith exactly for that reason, to take pressure off of this young and inexperienced bullpen. But it seems like the opposite is happening now, where now the young guys are carrying the old guys through this. Kind of lost in all the discussions about the Royals is that Jordan Lyles hasn't pitched in like a week. Jordan Lyles is like missing in action. The Royals are just like refusing to use him at all. Like he exists in the event that, I don't know, something goes wrong with our starting pitching and we just need a guy to pitch a few innings in a blowout game. And that opportunity has not presented itself because the starting pitching has been so freaking good. So maybe we should continue on with the game on... I have this all out of order. I got Saturday's game, Friday's game. Oh, I guess we just need to talk about those two. And then Sunday's game. Sunday's game was the game that I was afraid of the most because, like I said, Garrett Crochet having a fantastic start to the season. And, you know, the first couple of innings, he was looking absolutely amazing. I really was thinking, yep, it's going to be one of those games. We might not be getting through this one. But in the end, he didn't have an incredibly impressive line. Only five innings pitched, no walks, five strikeouts. He only has one walk in the season so far. Like, this guy's pitched 21 innings, he has one walk, and I think 21 strikeouts. So, I mean, that kind of suggests how good this guy is so far. But the Royals got two runs off of him. The Royals got two runs off of him thanks to, and I promise I'm not making this up in case you haven't been following this team, but you've been following this podcast, a two-run Hunter Renfroe home run. Hunter Renfroe got his first home run in a Royals uniform. He just smoked a ball into left field. Good job, Hunter Renfroe. You know, I should look up the numbers for Renfroe because I honestly want to believe that he had a good series. That, like, for the last few games, Hunter Renfroe was okay. Yeah, so April 3rd. So, yeah, going back to that first game against Baltimore, because he did sit on... He did sit on Saturday, so he didn't play that game. But, yeah, his last four games, .286 average with a .500 slugging and two RBIs. One walk, five strikeouts. Yeah, the strikeouts are a bit much, buddy. What's his strikeout rate for the year so far? Let me find that out. It is 33.3%. Actually, that's a bit lower than I was expecting. I was actually thinking it was going to be like 40 or 50%. If it's only 33% this early in the season, you know, that's not the worst thing in the world. He's always been kind of a high strikeout guy. But yeah, interestingly enough, his exit velo is actually up from last year. Oh, okay, never mind. I was looking at his his exit velo, and I was seeing 85.1 for last year, but then I realized that's just with Cincinnati last year. It was 88.5 with the Angels, who he played more games with, which means that his average was 88.3. But even still, it's saying that his exit velo for this year is 89.8, which isn't like, you know, a dramatic increase. His average before that, like before 2023, was 90. But that's, I'll still take it, because I've been saying that the problem with Hunter Renfro last season, and why he had such a dramatic, you know, decrease in his numbers, which is that his barrel rate was terrible. So that's why I've been really trying to defend this signing and saying, hey, this guy's probably just a couple of adjustments away from getting back to being a good hitter. I don't know if, you know, this one home run suggests anything necessarily. Let's see, his barrel rate's still 6.1. Wait, that's 2024. Okay, his barrel rate for... Ooh, guys. Okay, listen. So, like I've been saying, Hunter Renfro's barrel rate has been, like... It was consistent for a while. Do I have this on... Does this exist on... I was wondering if this existed on Baseball Reference. I should just go with a Fangraphs. I should just do that. Sorry for the, you know, kind of lack of edits here. I'm just kind of doing all this on the fly because I'm already a bit late, so I'm just trying to do all this quickly. Anyway, okay, so Hunter Renfro, where would I find barrel rate? Fucking Fangraphs, do something. Stop. Fangraphs is, like, not working. This is annoying. Okay, here we go. Finally, found it. Okay. Yeah, okay, so this is what I wanted to see. All right, so his barrel rate from 2016 to 2022... You know, before last year, actually, before prefacing this, last year it was 6.1%, and I had noted that it was dramatically lower from his career norm, which generally was above 10%, usually well above 10%. As a matter of fact, the one time it was below that was 2020, which was a shortened season. So yeah, that's what I've been looking at with Hunter Renfro. And in 2024 so far, small sample size, keep in mind, you know, it's just 19 games, or 19 events, sorry, the Royals haven't played 19 games, looking at the wrong thing and reading things wrong, but anyway, so far in 2024, it's saying that he's at a 10.5 barrel percentage, which would fall in line with his career norms. So, I mean, this doesn't mean too much for his expected numbers. I'm not here to say that, oh, Hunter Renfro is actually getting super unlucky or whatever. You know, his expected slugging and WOBA and all that good stuff, it's still down. But at the very least, I am seeing an improvement where I was hoping to see improvement. Also, interestingly, his chase rate seems to be up so far, as in he's chasing less than what he usually does. So, you know, like last year he chased at 33.5% of pitches outside of the zone, whereas beforehand he would be around like 30% or so, and this year he's at 25.9%. Yeah, you know what, guys? I'm gonna go out on a limb and say Hunter Renfro's actually... I'm gonna let him cook. Let's do that. Let's let Hunter Renfro cook. I'm really not ready to give up on this guy. I understand his first couple of games in KC were terrible, and I definitely complained about them a lot. But I am starting to now that Statcast is giving us numbers and baseball and, you know, BREF and Fangraphs and all that good stuff. Now that they have this stuff kind of installed and we can kind of get a clearer picture of what guys are doing, I'm willing to say Hunter Renfro might be up to something. The power still isn't there. You know, all the expected stats are still low, but I am still seeing some improvements, you know, some recovery with the way he's kind of seeing pitches and swinging the bat. So let's have this conversation in another couple of weeks, because I think the numbers for Hunter Renfro might be going... They might be on their way up. I do want to believe that this four-game stretch that he's had, where he's actually, you know, actually put together a decent hitting streak. He's had a hit in all the four of the last... He's had a hit in each of the last four of his games. I want to believe that that might be something... that might be a sign of something to come. So, here's hoping, because... You know, Hunter Renfro's got that player option, so him being bad for 1 year doesn't mean that he's bad for 1 year. It means he's bad for 2 years in Kansas City. On the other hand, Will Smith, you know, public enemy number one for the Royals, within the Royals fandom, he's on a 1 year deal. So that's actually a guy the Royals aren't too invested in, and they probably could cut him really early if, push comes to shove right there. So that's why I'm not too worried about this bullpen or whatever. It's like it's going to be fine. It's going to get figured out. If the Royals really are in competition for, a playoff spot midway through the season, they can get some mid-level bullpen pieces for probably not a whole lot out of their farm. So things are going to get better over there. Most important thing is that the starting rotation is absolutely fantastic. How good is it? Well, I have an article on Farm to Fountains, which will probably be out by the time that this... When did they say it was going to come out? Blah, 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 blah. 7 a.m. Oh, it's already out. Okay, go read my article about the Royals starting rotation and how freaking awesome it is. I mean, like it's almost cartoonish how much better it is than most teams. Although, there is one thing that's kind of surprising me. They actually don't have the best starting ERA. That actually goes to Boston. Yeah, apparently, Boston has some really good pitching this season. I like some of their pitchers. I did say that when I did my little preview or whatever of the whole season. But, yeah, they're at a 1.53 ERA with their rotation. But the Royals are very close behind with a 1.6 ERA. And then third place is Cleveland at 2.7. 2.7 ERA with their starting pitchers. But the thing that I wanted to share the most... Where is it? Where do I see this? How do I find this one particular stat that I was looking at? I actually don't know where to find this. Dang. Oh, here it is. Okay. Quality starts. So, quality starts are where a starting pitcher goes 6-plus innings and gives up 3 or fewer runs, right? In 10 games, the Royals have just played 10 games, and they have 8 such games. They have 8 quality starts in 10 games. Second place is a 4-way tie with 4 different teams, naturally, at 5. 5! The Royals are literally lapping the field in what they're getting out of their starting rotation. And the thing that I really hit on in my article is that not only are the Royals pitching really well, but they're pitching efficiently. They're getting the most innings out of their rotation. They technically don't have the most innings out of their starting pitching because the Padres have 2 more innings, even though they've played 3 more games. So that kind of that only illustrates my point further, frankly. But aside from that, the Royals had the second most innings out of their entire rotation. But they've only thrown... Where was it? They've only thrown the... As of right now... Where is it? I can't even see them anymore. Are you serious? Did it change that much? Oh my god. They've thrown the 23rd most pitches in their rotation. And the reason why I'm surprised as I'm reading that is because I did most of my research on this yesterday or the day before, and they were at like 12th. So, I mean, obviously a bunch of teams played yesterday, but yeah, you're talking about the rotation that has the second most innings in baseball, but the 7th or 8th fewest pitches thrown in baseball. So yeah, they're getting through their starts extremely quickly. We're seeing a bunch of starts from Royal starters going 6 innings or so and only throwing 75 pitches or something like that. Like, they've been incredibly efficient, and I want to believe that that could lead to something very good long term for the Royals. Like, this could be healthy for the Royals long term, because I'm sure if you've been following the MLB just in general at all, then you've heard the bad news about pitchers in this league. They are dropping like flies. They have been for the past couple of years, frankly, but pitching injuries are getting absolutely out of control, if they weren't out of control already. I mean, Gerrit Cole's out for a bit. Spencer Strider is probably going out with Tommy John. Shane Bieber, who actually quickly started looking like he might be back to Cy Young form this season, he's out with Tommy John. Yuri Perez, Tommy John. The list goes on. There are just tons and tons of pitchers that are going down, tons of great pitchers in this game that are going down with the dreaded Tommy John surgery. And, you know, there is no magic button solution to this. And I'm definitely not going to say that, you know, the Royals starters having thrown fewer pitches just automatically means that they will, you know, it automatically means that they're going to avoid Tommy John, because relievers also get Tommy John and stuff like that. But I still want to believe that it's healthy, you know, like it reduces the risk. It reduces their chances of having to come to that, I guess. That's what I want to believe. I want to believe that this can only be a good thing if the Royals aren't making their guys throw 100-plus pitches. They've only had, I think, 4 separate occasions where a Royal starter has gone 90-plus pitches, and they haven't had a single 100-pitch outing at all. The most was, I believe, Brady Singer's first start, where he went 98 pitches and threw 7 innings. So he was still plenty efficient there. But anyway, on Sunday, the Royals had a first on Sunday. It was the first time their starter didn't go 5 innings or more. Yeah, for all intents and purposes, Alec Marsh actually had the worst start of any pitcher on the Royals this season. He went 4.2 innings, gave up 3 earned runs. And I did say in my postgame after that on Twitter that a good lineup does way more. He also gave up 8 hits. Only 1 walk, which I think was kind of fortunate because he did not locate very well. Only 3 strikeouts. Yeah, Marsh was just kind of all over the place in that outing. Threw 78 pitches, so he did labor a little bit, and again, didn't even finish the 5th inning. So this is where I think we can kind of thank our lucky stars that we were playing the White Sox and not like a good team. Not even a competent team, because, yeah, Marsh definitely got away with a lot more than just 3 runs. I mean, still, take what you can get. It still counts. But that just, I mean, that's kind of a testament to just how great this pitching staff has been so far. Look, the rotation has been so far where, you know, 10 games into the season, the Royals finally got their, I guess, 1 bad start, and I'm classifying 4.2 innings, 3 runs as a bad start right there. That's how high the bar is for this team right there. Second worst start is Michael Wacha's first game, where he went 5 innings and gave up 3 runs. So Marsh was only worse than Wacha by 1 single out. So if we're saying that Michael Wacha's, like I'm that meme where it's like Michael Wacha pitching 5 innings and giving up 3 runs, I'm like, oh, you're sweet. And then Alec Marsh is the nerdy guy saying 4.2 innings. I'm like, hello, human resources. Except the other thing is that Michael Wacha is also making $16 million, and Alec Marsh is on a rookie contract, and he's supposed to be our number 5 starter. So yeah, Alec Marsh being our worst pitcher in this rotation potentially says some really good things about the rest of the guys in this rotation. It's honestly been amazing just watching these guys pitch. Like, again, I think I asked this question last time, like, who's the worst starter in this rotation? I kind of leaned towards Seth Lugo, but the way he pitched against the, did he pitch against the White Sox? Whatever. It's just so hard to even decide, like, who's the worst starter in this game. And if one of them is Alec Marsh, if Alec Marsh is the answer, then fine. Your number 5 guy is supposed to be your worst. If Seth Lugo is our worst, then man, everyone else is really good, because Seth Lugo is fantastic so far. Yeah, this start to the Royals season has been really fun to watch. And hopefully it'll only continue, because, I mean, it's funny how some people were kind of afraid of the schedule this month, and we're immediately going to follow this series up with a series against the Astros, who are off to a pretty awful start, although I'm not going to take them that seriously. I'm not going to say, oh yeah, the Astros suck this season. But I was the one who was saying, you know what, the Blue Jays are not very good. The Blue Jays are a mid-team, and so far I was right about that, and I'm definitely not worried about the Mets. And we have another 3 games against the Sox coming up next week, so... Yeah, the schedule doesn't get a whole lot harder until we face the Orioles again in about 10 days or so. So we'll get into this Houston series after I add something to the podcast. I will be right back. And we're back. Thank you very much for your patience. So one thing I'm going to try doing is I actually kind of want to bring these series previews to Farm to Fountains and then, you know, provide them in written form. So if you want a little bit more information, a little bit more of a team overview, farmtofountains.com, where I write about this stuff. I don't know if I'm going to write about every series preview because we've also got, you know, there are a couple. There are other writers on this website, I guess, that might also do this. But anyway, for now, the Astros, I mentioned, they are off to a pretty bad start record-wise. They're currently 4-7. However, they have a positive Pythagorean record. They actually have a +1 run differential, which means that they technically, for all intents and purposes, should be a .500 team at the very least. And they've also been on the giving end on one of the baseball's best stories so far this season, where this guy, Ronel Blanco, this guy, at the end of spring training, had a kid, and then found out that he was making the roster after he was essentially just kind of a spot guy for the past couple of seasons. So just kind of makes the roster by surprise, not really, you know, didn't have any big expectations. First start of the season for him, he throws a no-hitter. he throws a freaking no-hitter. And then his second start of the season goes five hitless, like 5 2/3 hitless. So he actually starts the season on a hitless streak. He set a new record for most outs recorded before giving up a hit to start the season, which actually, funny enough, was a record that was set by Austin Cox last season. You know, the guy on the Royals. Yeah, imagine the 2023 Royals actually having a record set for excellence in some ways. All this being said, we're not actually going to see Ronel Blanco in this series, so I guess there's no point in bringing him up, but it was just a good thing to mention. But still, I'm not going to say, oh, the Astros, 4-7, they're really falling off, aren't they? And I'm going to say, nah, the Astros are probably still good. One thing I want to note is that they acquired Dylan Coleman in the offseason. You guys remember that? Yeah, that's what happened to Dylan Coleman. He's over there. He actually threw a scoreless inning for them at some point this season, but he's back in the minors where he's thrown 2 scoreless innings with 4 strikeouts and no walks. Okay. If I hear that Dylan Coleman's actually, like, good this season, I'm going to be a little bit concerned because that might not be a good sign for the Royals if they do that. But I don't know. Will we see Dylan Coleman again? I have no idea. The Astros have definitely been getting pretty injured, pretty banged up so far this season. But who really knows? The guys we actually will see are not really the best, actually, in terms of really everything, I guess. Hang on one second. Sorry, opening up my own article that I'm now going to use as a note for this series preview. Alright, team ERA 3.99, that's 12th in the majors. Weighted runs created, or WRC plus, of 123, which is 4th in baseball. Yeah, they do have Jose Abreu is off to an absolutely abysmal start, which I don't know, maybe that's a thing for him, because this was also happening last year. Like, Jose Abreu was terrible for the first, like, month or two of the season last year. Then he put it together and was, like, respectable again, but, yeah, I don't know. He has a negative 33 ops plus, so that's cool. But aside from that, they only have 2 hitters in their, beyond that in their starting lineup that are below average in ops plus. Everyone else is well above average. Yeah, this lineup's stacked. Yainer Diaz, Altuve is still really good, I guess. Jeremy Pena is off to a hot start. Yordan Alvarez is legit, in my opinion, the scariest hitter in baseball right now. Dude is just David Ortiz reborn, I guess. So, yeah, don't sleep on this Astros lineup, even though their record doesn't look very good. However, there is one thing I will say, that we are not really getting the best of their rotation. I don't know if their rotation is even good at all outside of Framber Valdez. No, actually, no, it is. There's Framber Valdez and Christian Javier, and then, of course, Ronel Blanco has a 0 ERA right now. But we're not seeing either of those guys right now. Or are we? Wait a minute. No, we are seeing Christian Javier. Sorry, that's happening today, in fact. Yeah, today is going to be another quality rubber match. Christian Javier versus Cole Gatlin Reagans. Yeah, Javier in 11 innings has not given up a run so far this season, so that's a nice task for the Royals. If we can change that, that would be pretty cool. And Reagans, we're just hoping, continues his hot start. It is worth noting that he pitched twice against the Astros last season. Actually, he pitched three times against the Astros last season because he was with the Rangers for a bit. But with the Royals, he pitched two games against the Astros last season and won both of those games. Because remember, we went 5-1 against the Astros last year, deep into September. But they posted they got 7 runs off of him in 12 innings. So Reagans actually didn't look too great against the Astros last season. We'll have to see how this will go. Hopefully hopefully this is the new Cole Reagans. This is the good Cole Reagans. This is the Cole gunshot sound effect Reagans that I like to hype up. Wednesday though, the other two games were not really getting the best part of the Astros rotation, unless something changes, because Framber Valdez, I think, was supposed to pitch last night on Monday, and then his start got scratched. So I'm hoping that doesn't screw up the order, and I hope the next two pitchers we actually face are, you know, those pitchers don't change. And on Wednesday, it's going to be Hunter Brown, who's obviously the ERA is going to be high if he's only pitched one game, but still, 6.43 ERA. Last year he was in the rotation. He had an ERA above 5. He was just kind of a guy to fill out the rest of the rotation. Not very convincing. So yeah, nothing really interesting right there. And Seth Lugo, meanwhile, has been very good to start the season. Hopefully he can just keep that going. But it is worth mentioning that Lugo is never expected to be all that great of a pitcher, and this is a very good lineup he's going to face. So I would say this is the first real test that Lugo is going to face this season. This will be a very good test for really all of our pitchers. So hopefully he can keep it up. It is nice that we're doing this in Kauffman Stadium, where, you know, the fields and the walls are very cavernous and spacious. So not too easy to hit him around that hard in this place. And then on Thursday, day game on Thursday, the Astros are going to send out J.P. France. Sorry for the F slur right there. I know some people don't want to hear that word, but that's his name. Unfortunately, his name is France. It is what it is. Anyway, he's another. Well, actually, he's not young, but he made his. Okay, so this is interesting. I actually didn't note this in the article, but he made his major league debut last season at age 28, and he pitched to a 3.83 ERA in 23 starts. So he was pretty good, but his FIP was almost a full run higher. So low strikeout numbers, high walk numbers, a strikeout to walk ratio just above 2, which is not good. So this will be interesting. And so far this season, he's pitched 2 starts, 4.76 ERA. So, although his FIP is 2 runs lower than that, so I don't know, maybe luck is reversing on him, but, like, in an even better way, I don't, like, actually, he's unlucky right now, I don't know, so we'll just have to see for ourselves when we get there. Meanwhile, Brady Singer is going to take the mound for the Royals, and hopefully he can just keep doing what he's already done. Hopefully he'll keep using his new pitches that he's shown off. And like I said, this is just going to be a very good test for our pitchers. So hopefully Singer will rise to the occasion. If we can get another 2 games to, close out this homestand, then that would be awesome. If we only get 1, I won't be all that disappointed. Because like I said, Houston's a very good team. And that still means that we'll go 5-2 on this homestand, which is pretty good. That's the nice thing. Now that the Royals are outperforming expectations, it's like they actually have some room to mess up a little bit. We can afford to drop 2 games against the Astros and we'll still come out of this 1 game above 500. That'd be wonderful. Yeah, if we're still above 500 at the end of this series, I'll be delighted. If we get swept though, then okay, we might have to have a bit of a stern talk. I might have to have a stern talk with all of these guys, because that'll be a bit of a disappointment. That'll knock the wind out of our sails a little bit. But whatever happens, we'll talk about it when we get there. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you very much for listening to the Royal Deluxe Podcast. If you enjoyed it, if you appreciated it, if you like this episode, I would appreciate it if you rated it, reviewed it, and subscribed to it on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on so that you get new episodes delivered straight to your feed as they come out. Give me feedback. Tell me whatever it is. Ask a question. At royaldeluxepodcast@gmail.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter at TheMFNKC and also at Royal Deluxe Pod. That's the podcast Twitter for, you know, more podcast-y kind of things. And make sure you're checking out farmtofounds.com for written analysis about the Kansas City Royals from people who are a lot smarter than me and a lot better at it than me. Thanks, Fans for Sports Network, for having me. And, yeah, but all of that being said, if you don't do any of that, no hard feelings. Love you all the same. Thank you very much for making the Royal Deluxe Podcast a part of your day, and I hope you're having a good one. Hope you have a good week. Hope to see you again on Friday, and hopefully we'll have a lot more great stuff to talk about on Friday. But until then, I've been Lux, and go Royals! My above 500 Royals. I'm so proud.